You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This is the Dan Le Batour Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
I don't know if it's the Aaron Rodgers stuff or whatever it is that's happened during this pandemic, but it seems like the coverage around the Deshaun Watson stuff has gone largely quiet. I don't know if there's a lot that can be added as criminal investigations take place and you've got lawyers going back and forth. And so it's difficult to talk about. But Jenny Vrentas is someone who has got additional reporting on this. She's got a wealth of knowledge on all of this subject matter. And for Sports Illustrated, she has done some stuff that have advanced this story some, because I do think the Deshaun Watson story has largely disappeared, which is weird. Quarterback in his prime, never available, was about to be traded, and then what happens happens publicly, and it seems like he's in real trouble that isn't going to be easy to buy his way out of. So, Jenny, thank you for being with us, and thank you for the reporting that you're doing on this. What can you tell us is the newest information around Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I think you're exactly right. It has kind of receded to the background a little bit. And perhaps that's because the legal process is ongoing. So there's a instinct, I suppose, to let that play out. But in our reporting, we decided to cast a wide net and see what could we learn about the situation that is not necessarily tied to the legal process. And we talked to more than a dozen massage therapists in the Houston area, talked to people who have worked on Watson, people who have been contacted by him. And I think one of the main takeaways is that there's a far longer tail to the situation than has played out in the public eye. As far back as 2019, concerns were being raised about his conduct in the massage therapy community and directly to him. And we spoke to therapists who were warned last year, they said, about his inappropriate behavior on the massage table, or that he would request only to be covered by a small towel. We spoke to a veteran therapist who talked to him about his conduct in 2019 after something had happened with a different therapist that she'd referred him to in an appointment. So I think there's a sort of there's a tendency to say, okay, well, this came out of the blue. Where did it come from? And in reality, it had been percolating under the surface for quite some time. The other piece of information that we uncovered is that the first plaintiff, Ashley Solis, she's now identified herself, she was in touch with lawyers at Tony Busby's firm as early as December. So that was in advance of Watson's trade demand. And as far back as March, the day after her appointment with Watson, she was seeking advice through a colleague of hers. They were seeking advice from other therapists on how to handle what had happened in her appointment with him.
What are the details that you can give us? Too many voices saying the same thing here, Jenny. It feels like, I mean, we could say innocent and until proven guilty, and we live in America and due process and all of these things, but it's too many voices saying the same thing. So what are the details that you found most incriminating as a fact gatherer? You're not here to give us an opinion on whether or not he's guilty or not. You're simply telling the stories of these women.
You're right. That's exactly what it is. It's basically trying to collect as many facts as we could collect. And we didn't have help from either the defense attorneys or the plaintiff's attorneys. We just set out on our own and reached out to massage therapists. And this is what we came up with. I think two things really stood out to me. One is we reported in March an account from a massage therapist who had worked with him in November 2019. And she described a session in which he was thrusting his pelvis on the table while he had an erection. She noticed some fluids on his stomach. He took the towel off so that he was entirely uncovered midway through the session. And she reported that conduct to the therapist who'd referred him to her. And that therapist then told her that only one therapist had not complained in a text message that we reviewed. Whether the creepy stuff is his intention or not, he does it every time. And only one therapist has not complained, is what the referring therapist told her. I think that account is also important because this person that we spoke to, we called her Mary. She's not suing Watson. She's not currently a plaintiff. She's not working with Tony Busby. She wanted to share her account so that other massage therapists in other cities, perhaps if he was traded, or, you know, plays somewhere else, she wanted them to know. And she also wanted these accounts to be taken seriously because she had this firsthand experience. And we took steps to corroborate her account independently. She sent messages to Watson afterward indicating that he made her feel uncomfortable. I only do massage, she wrote to him after. So that was one important piece. And then I think the other one is that first plaintiff, Ashley Solis, one of her colleagues reached out to a veteran therapist who happened to be the same veteran therapist who set up Mary's appointment with Watson in 2019. So it's a small community. But she said she sent a message the day after Ashley Solis's appointment with Watson, in which she said, you know, I have a colleague who was solicited during a session by a professional athlete at her in-home studio, and basically said, she feels like she can't do anything. It'll come back to bite her. How would you proceed? So in my mind, those are two important data points that occurred long before any legal proceedings, any PR spin, anything like that.
As a fact gatherer, why are you offering us the details of it doesn't appear this woman has any motive when she's telling this story and talking to me?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was what I thought was really strong about her account. Aside from the fact that we were able to independently corroborate it, she was basically coming forward because she wanted people to know that this situation is real, that it happened to her. And her account was in November 2019. She felt as though, based on the behavior described in the civil suits, it seems as though the behaviors had escalated over time. And that was also of concern to her as well. And so I think we need to listen seriously to some of these accounts. And there has been a lot of spin that, you know, again, this somehow relates to his trade demand. Even in NFL circles, that's been a conspiracy theory that has been floated. I just think it's so important that this was happening out of public view for some time, and that I think there's a tremendous power imbalance when you are a massage therapist with a prominent client. You have your own, many of these women have their own businesses. They're relying on it in some cases to support their families. So there is a big imbalance that can impact your lack of options when you find yourself in that situation.
Jenny, in your reporting, you talked to some other NFL players about their relationships with their licensed massage therapists. And one thing that stood out to me was that one of the athletes that you spoke to said that it seemed unusual that Deshaun Watson had reached out to so many licensed massage therapists. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So the number appears to be at least 44. If you count all of the 22 plaintiffs as having worked on him, there was a 23rd who withdrew her suit, who she did not want to go forward with her real name. And then there were 18 supporting therapists that were released through the office of Watson's defense attorney, Rusty Hardin. We spoke to two others who had confirmed accounts working on him. So yes, you're like over 44 at that point, or at least at 44. He reached out to others that we saw messages of. The players we spoke with, one had a set group of five bodywork professionals. They do different things, cuppings, yoga, stretching, massages. Another one said he had worked with not more than six massage therapists in his entire playing career. So it stood out as unusual to them. And actually, one of the players said it to express skepticism. I don't know guys who've worked with 22 massage therapists, is what he said essentially. But it's important to note that Watson's team has not denied that. They have admitted that Watson has gone to Instagram to book therapists. And in fact, in our reporting, a person with close ties to the Texans said that a member of the team's medical staff did have concerns upon learning that he was going to Instagram because of the injury risk to the franchise quarterback.
Jenny, what has your reporting led you to think regarding possible criminal charges and also on the civil end of it, settlement talks?
Yeah, so it's interesting. As far as the settlement talks, it seems as though there were settlement talks. The sides entered into a confidentiality agreement that would cover only the mediation process. But recent statements from both sides that no settlement is being discussed indicates that those talks broke down. I think one reason that one area that the sides differ in was confidentiality. Rusty Hardin had said Watson would want the details of any settlement to be made public and to be able to discuss these cases, you know, without any restrictions. Whereas Tony Busby, the plaintiff's attorney, has said that the women would want the settlements to be confidential. Their privacy has already been pretty compromised. And in his words, he said that they would want the terms to be confidential, and they would also want Watson to get counseling. So it's possible settlement conversations resume. I would imagine in Watson's interests, he would want these to be cleared so that, his football future can gain some clarity at that point, right? So he can't really move on with, is he going to play for the Texans? Is he going to go somewhere else until these are cleared up? And a civil process, if it were to go to trial, could take a year and a half. As for the criminal charges, it's an interesting question. Texas has a pretty high threshold for sexual assault. So only two of the 22 cases are alleging sexual assault under Texas law, which would be some kind of penetration via force or coercion. But the others indicate other violations of the Texas Penal Code that would be misdemeanor offenses as opposed to felony. So indecent assault. So in some of the cases, touching the massage therapist's hand with his penis, that would be indecent assault. There's other assault is another one, and harassment. So there are smaller misdemeanor offenses. We don't know exactly where the criminal investigations are going. We just know that the Houston Police Department has open and active investigations right now.
He was basically, from your reporting, he was basically using this as a sex delivery service. That's what it feels like from voice after voice.
Well, it's, in Hardin's description, he has acknowledged that Watson did engage in sex acts during some massage appointments. Where their legal defense is going to rely is consent. From the accounts of the women in the civil complaints, they were going into this as a massage appointment. They booked a massage client. Not all of them are licensed, but some of them are licensed. And this was a professional setting that they entered into with the massage table. They began a massage and it took an unexpected turn. So there are differing accounts based on both sides. I also think the question of consent will be a really interesting one in this, this whole dialogue, because in Texas law, coercion is added as a reason or a factor that can establish non-consent. And I do think, according to experts that we've spoken with, it's very hard for a person to consent in a situation like this where you're a contracted employee with a prominent client because you are relying on them for your payment. They can impact your future business. There's a lot of implicit or explicit potential threats that a person could make in that situation. So I think coercion will be an interesting part of the consent piece.
Jenny, where is the league? What is the league saying as it relates to Deshaun Watson?
So they're saying that the investigation is ongoing. We know that they've met with at least four of the plaintiffs. Tony Busby said that some of these plaintiffs felt uncomfortable, so he's not sure if others are going to meet with them. They have not interviewed Watson yet, but that is pretty normal. That is usually the last step in the investigation. And I will say the discussion with the settlement and the fact that Watson would not like for there to be a confidentiality agreement, I do wonder if part of that is he wants the ability to defend himself, whether in the league investigation, in the public, to teams that may be interested in him, et cetera. But yes, the league investigation's ongoing. They're also interviewing therapists who work for a massage therapy firm that is contracted with the team. And it's unclear how long that process will take. We know they've requested some of the police records, but have not received those yet. And just back to an earlier point too, I just wanted to say also that, you know, for the women who are booked for these appointments, in their view, this was an athlete who was looking for a massage as part of his performance regimen, right? Because we do know that that is part of playing a contact sport. So I think, you know, it's not abnormal for a high profile athlete to request a massage. Maybe reaching out to them on Instagram was strange, but from their view, hey, it's a prominent new client. This could be an exciting opportunity that could really open up their business.
Jenny, what do you think has been the weight of all these accusations on the football side of it? Because I have to think that teams that once made him highly sought are now sort of peeling away going, whoa, I want nothing to
do with
this.
Or on the women's side of it. Like, yeah. I'd be curious about the burden on them in doing this publicly when maybe they don't need to or want to.
Yeah, I think the fact that the courts compelled the women to refile with their names is something that experts say could have a chilling effect on other survivors coming forward. The rates of reporting of sexual assaults are already low. And so the idea that you would have to use your name if filing a civil suit could deter others from coming forward. And as for the football side, I definitely think it has slowed down his exit from Houston. You know, it seemed as though the team was getting to a point where they were ready and would entertain at least offers to move on. And this has certainly brought that to a halt. I am sure there are teams in the league who are looking at the allegations and thinking, can we justify this? Can we do it anyway? I'm sure those are the conversations that are going on inside NFL buildings. But I, to this point, no one has been willing to make that move. And I think it's largely because the number of suits, 22 is many complaints. It's not just a single situation.
We were talking about journalism earlier and what it is that happened in terms of Shannon Sharp, Julio Jones news that we ended up, you know, feasting on as media members. I do want to walk through journalistically with Jenny the following, because this is fact-based reporting that she is doing on subject matter that can be he said, she said, but the she said is now 44 she saids behind it. You are reporting objectively, aspiring to objectivity. You're also a woman, and I'm wondering when Harden and that settlement and the shaming and the public of the women, what has made you sort of recoil in here? Because this is the system working against the woman to don't do this to powerful people because it's not going to be worth it. Maybe financially, but not emotionally, because everyone's going to think you're a gold digger.
I think that's a really important point that you raise, because experts that we've spoken to have indicated that the dialogue around these cases has really set things back. It feels like it's out of the 90s or the 2000s. One person we spoke with said it's certainly not making it easier for survivors to come forward. And there have been a lot of assumptions made about the behaviors or the path toward recourse that assault survivors may take. And I think the reality is it's different for every person. One, seeking financial reparations is a normal part of the judicial process. It can bring people closure. It also may be preferred rather than going the criminal route because a criminal investigation is out of the person's control. And many of the women, many of the massage therapists are women of color. And it's also understandable that they may not feel comfortable or trust going to the police in this situation, whereas a civil process would be within their control. And I also think that in terms of continuing contact with somebody or booking a future appointment, those don't necessarily mean that an initial incident of assault didn't happen. Those are also normal responses that we see with survivors. I think the Harvey Weinstein case in particular highlighted that there isn't one reaction, that, you know, there are a lot of different responses that can occur, especially in a coercive situation where one person has some kind of control over the other's career or livelihood.
Jenny, you touched on the timeline a little bit of the allegations and Watson's trade request from the Texans. Can you shed a little bit of light on if those two things are related? Like if he had heard that these allegations were coming and he decided he wanted to get out of town, or is there anything there?
I think it's a really interesting question, Jess, because the first notice to his camp, the veteran therapist who was contacted by Ashley Solis's colleague right after her March 2020 appointment, received a message in December saying that Ashley Solis was in touch with a lawyer at Busby's law firm. That veteran therapist says she then told Watson's marketing manager at that point. So they had some awareness that a potential lawsuit was coming in December. And then further, that marketing manager said in a sworn affidavit that a second woman had contacted him in mid-January. So from Watson's perspective, he's denied all allegations. He's denied any wrongdoing in massage therapy appointments. So it's certainly within the realm of possibility that he didn't think this would be any factor in his NFL future because he believed that he did nothing wrong. But ultimately, this really has been the complicating factor in his desire to leave Houston. And so it's interesting what was communicated to the team at that point. When did the team learn that this was kind of percolating underneath the surface? If the dialogue between Watson and the Texans was frayed at that point, then I think that when these came out publicly, there probably could be a perception among the Texans that they were blindsided.
Jenny, this has been very serious subject matter. Your reporting has been very thorough on this, and all Billy has been thinking about since these rankings came out is that he's ranked ahead of you by The Guardian in terms of leading football analysts internationally.
And after listening to Jenny, I think Billy's wondering how.
Yeah, Billy, you saw that was thoroughly reported. I don't understand how it is that you were ranked ahead of her.
I mean, I would say this, after hearing all the reporting, at the very least, you should be ahead of Collinsworth, you know? He was, I think, 7. You were 8. I think 7, right, Jenny?
All right, I'll take it. I think we were supposed to discuss this when I came on Stupidity a couple of weeks ago, and we didn't get to it. So I'm glad that we have a second opportunity to dive in. I just have to say, though, I should already have been surpassed by Sugats in the ratings. So that's who I'm really looking for to see.
I don't understand how Billy is ranked higher. How is Billy ranked higher than her? I don't understand. Billy has done no reporting on anything. I think the news he broke was a bobblehead.
Dan. Sometimes things are best left unsaid. Okay. You know what I mean?
Jenny, thank you for... Oh, for the love of God. Okay, excellent.
Hey, drop the dookie.
Thank you. Jenny, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate the conversation.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I want to get to a Dwayne Wade story here because I have found his evolution fascinating for a number of different reasons. He really has sort of grown up right before our eyes in South Florida in terms of the connection to this city, where we've seen him go through a public and messy divorce, and we've seen him on his hands and knees publicly because his restaurant failed, and he just learned things on the front end of his career and then married a Hollywood starlet that he's willing to follow through an evolution in adulthood that has been fascinating to watch. Because I'm not sure, I can't know this for sure, but I don't know if Dwayne Wade would be as publicly tolerant as he is, far, far left-leaning in terms of leading athletes, if not for marrying that woman and learning things that he's had to learn about love and marriage and raising children. And they've been a real power couple in a way that's been impressive to see him do things like this, where he says, I don't think I should lead in this marriage because I'm following her love, and it has taught me a great many things about being an adult and masculinity and things the locker room doesn't necessarily teach you. So I want to get into what Dwayne Wade said, because many men looked at it and said, oh, look at this guy, soft, like can't lead his own marriage. And Dwayne's like, no, I got to put down my pride and ego and follow love because it makes me a better human being.
He was getting hit with soft on marriage. I mean, really? Because my wife leads our marriage. She leads our family. I take her lead on just about everything. That's crazy.
So does mine.
Yeah.
He was getting hit with the idea of hyper-masculinity being something that's not what a man says, right? That's not what an ego-soaked, prideful man says.
He comes from a different world than you or Greg, those two gods, professionally, socially. In black culture, that means a whole different thing, too. He's an alpha male in an alpha male sport, so his audience is a lot less receptive to that notion than, say, our audience when you just casually drop for everyone to understand that your wives lead in their marriage.
No, that's fair. I mean, I think his fans probably expect Dwayne, because of what Mike just said, they expect Dwayne to be the leader on everything, including his marriage. So I understand that he'll get some backlash that I won't get for saying exactly what he just said.
Backlash is overstated, okay? And at this point, you take any side on anything in America, and it's going to break down culturally, generationally. We're going to fight over every single last thing. Whatever you think of Alpha and hyper-masculinity, Dwayne Wade tells you at every turn, my wife leads my marriage, whatever the consequences of that in terms of how you perceive it don't matter to me. So we'll get to that in a second. But first, I wanted to get to another story that I know less about, because this, I did not know Liz Cambage until yesterday. I did not know this sound until yesterday. And I thought it was interesting to hear a woman not tolerate a man. And this man has been suspended. And forgive me, I don't know the name of the Connecticut coach. It's the what I know of this story is Liz Cambage getting really bothered by the disrespect of being called the 300-pound woman. And I have not heard this kind of sound from the WNBA before, where she is just trampling, scorching this man. She is not being careful with her comments. She is not being gentle. She is offended and disrespected, and she does not tolerate this disrespect.
His name is Kurt Miller.
Thank you. So let's hear this sound. Do I have to courtesy anybody? Is this from her? This is just from her gram?
Something went down in today's game, and I need to speak on it, because if there's one thing about me is that I will never let a man disrespect me. Ever, especially a little white one. So to the coach of Connecticut, I'm sorry, little sir man, I do not know your name. But the next time you try to call out a referee, you know, trying to get a call, being like, come on, she 300 pounds. I'm gonna need you to get right, baby, because I'm 6'8". I'm weighing, I just double checked, because I love to be correct and get facts. I'm weighing 235 pounds, and I'm very proud of being a big bitch. Buddy, Big Ben's baby. So don't ever try to disrespect me or another woman in the league. I don't know if that's how, like, coaches run. Like, you just disrespect, you try to disrespect women like that from the sideline. And you're so lucky it was during a game. That whole part, you were so lucky that I was at my doing my job. Anyway, to that little man, like, whole little, tiny, like, where is you? Stop trying to project your insecurities, baby. Pick up the phone, call the psych, because you projecting some bullshit right now. And next time you try to disrespect me, remember, I'm 235. It might seem like 300 pounds to your little ass. I'm 235, baby.
The accent, your little ass. Mm-hmm. What is that accent?
She's Australian. She was born in the UK, and then I think her mom and her moved to Australia when she was 10 years old. But she is the last person you want to cross in the WNBA. She's known for calling people out and being a shit talker and just saying what's on her mind. So it's hilarious that this guy thought he could get away with this disparaging comment and that she wouldn't say anything. Like, she went full court press on public call out, and everyone's taking her side, and he got fined for it. Like, it makes him look really bad.
Suspended too, right? Didn't he get suspended for a game?
Maybe,
one game.
But I think, Jess, you probably feel like it should be more, right? Because I do.
I don't know, like, the proper, I don't really know that the scope of WNBA suspensions. I think his apology was kind of weak. He was like, I'm sorry for what I said and I've learned from it. It's like, dude, it's been like 12 hours. Like, what have you learned? Like, you clearly meant what you said and thought it was okay to be disparaging about what she looked like, and you got called out for it. So maybe just, like, shut up for a little bit, take your suspension, and then, I don't know, learn from it later on or actually, like, do some work. But I don't know. It was just funny. She's a badass. I like her.
In what context was he calling her a 300-pounder? Was this, like, a body-to-body type thing trying to get a call?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically. He was saying, like, oh, she's 300 pounds. Like, you're not going to call that? Like, look at her. She's huge. That was a disparaging... It was not said in a good way. Like, I mean, you could, and it's funny because in sports, like, being someone who's big and who's powerful is an asset when you're talking about male athletes a lot of the time. Yeah. But when it comes to, like, female athletes, like, that's not going to fly. And she heard it and called him out for it.
Yeah, I guess, like, Rick Adelman is turning over in his grave, even though I'm pretty sure he's still alive, because I'm sure he called the Shaq 400.
Right.
Come on. He's 400 pounds. How are you going to call that on
that's
him?
Exactly,
that's actually
right.
Us getting closer to equality, I think, but we've suspended this guy now.
No, this is not necessarily equality. You still cannot say disparaging things about a woman's weight, even if she's 235 pounds.
We probably probably shouldn't say it about anyone's weight, but Mike, as the father of two daughters, I'm telling you, those words can be impactful. They could stick with you and stay with you for a long time.
I know. It's a juxtaposition from the NBA. Like I said, Rick Adelman turning over in his grave because we've done shows calling Shaq fat, and ain't nobody out here calling for suspensions or saying it's even disparaging.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a total difference in gender dynamics in the way that comments about weight and body image can be perceived. And I think like one aspect of it, this that's also funny is that Kurt Miller is a tiny dude. Like, he is 160 soaking wet.
I know. She's like, well, you're disparaging, so I'm going to call out your little white ass.
I feel like this is the one place where I can offer some expertise. The last place you're allowed to shame anyone is we were talking about Mike Ryan's child being afraid of a hippo named after me. I feel like I'm allowed some liberties here. When you say we've spent some shows making fun of Shaq's weight, we've spent some decades making fun of mine. I feel like I'm allowed some liberties here.
Yes, but not if you're the New York Liberty, Dan.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.